And we're going to take your phone calls right now on Coast to Coast. And our guest is John Rhodes. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM as soon as our equipment is ready. We'll just continue to chat for a while we can. John, let me go to you right now and chat with you for just a second while we can. Why don't you finish up on what you were talking about at the top?
Well, during the course of my investigation of this thing with the Grand Canyon and this large underground city that was found there, I had actually come into contact with the chief of Old Arabi Village on the Hopi Reservation. Now, the Old Arabi Village is the longest continually settled settlement in North America. Since the 1600s, the Hopi have been living there. And I just happened to meet him by chance when I was there and start talking to him, and we actually entertained a very lengthy relationship over the many years in which I spent many nights sitting by his side under the starlight in a dark house because he was blind at the time. No running water in there. It was very bare. And he would relate to me the things about the Hopis and the Navajos and the Serpent Brothers and about the history of his own people. He was, these gentlemen are called the Mongwis, which means, you know, like chieftain. Since he's the chieftain of the oldest of all the villages, Hopi villages, technically he's chief of the Hopi. At this time, he's actually in an elderly home because he's incapacitated. But Chief Stanley was telling me about how the Serpent Brothers and the Ant People are going to be expected back, and even a lot of his own tribe out there have lost touch with these old beliefs. But the core of the ancient of the elders that are there that have held tightly on to the ancient beliefs know that we're right on the cusp or event horizon of another cyclical devastation which will drive humanity possibly onto the brink of extinction, and that these Ant People or these Serpent Brothers are going to be making a reappearance. And when you tie that in with what's going on in Mexico City and the UFO activity over the Four Corners area of the United States, you can get a pretty decent picture, or at least a flavor, of what might be yet to come.
John, I've always been interested in the Hopi prophecy, and we'll be back. We'll open up the phone lines now on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie. John Rhodes, your phone call. John, before we go to the calls, David Icke believes that there is a reptilian bloodline with the power elite out there on this planet. Do you share his views?
A number of years ago, when I was talking about the subject matter, I was approached to contribute to some of the views of Mr. Icke, and I really decided not to because I knew that there was a conspiracy angle going into this, and I was really looking to try and look at this from a very objective viewpoint.
Okay.
I believe we're on the cusp of something very dangerous, and we got to be careful we don't turn into a witch hunt just by people saying, well, I saw him turn into a reptoid.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, and that can be very, very dangerous, and we've learned historically that we tend to get whipped up into a frenzy when thinking this way. And there's a lot of unsubstantiated reports of somebody saying that Bush turned into a reptoid, or the queen turned, or they were sex slaves to these reptilian leaders. And I think, like, going back to this, it's an easy thing to do to take the ills of our own actions and place them onto another species who we have no idea other than beyond and above that they might exist. And we have to steer ourselves away from that. It can cause negative ramifications, fear. I've noticed it in very many people who have had abductions or are talking about this stuff. The fear generated by this subject matter can actually suppress your immune system and cause extreme stress in your physical body.
Fair enough.
There are negative things that can feed off that.
Okay, we go to the phones now. We'll pick it up by going to our West of the Rockies line. First, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi. How are you this evening?
I'm doing fine.
Hi.
And where are you and who are you?
I'm Dee. I'm from Idaho.
Hi, Dee. Go ahead.
I was just going to comment on the video footage that Mr. Rhodes was talking about with the hundreds of objects flying over Mexico City. If that's the one I'm thinking of, it was done by Jaime Maussan, and he showed that in its entirety at the X conference this last April.
Wow.
There's some amazing footage on that. One of the objects that he showed was like a tube-shaped object, and Mr. Masson said that they had estimated that there was roughly 20,000 objects came out of this tube-shaped thing.
Yeah, that's the one where it looked, appeared like it was a mothership and other vehicles or anomalous objects were actually detaching from it, flying around, and then reattaching to it?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it was amazing. There must have been at least 200 people in the room.
Well, they were gasping, weren't they?
Yeah, literally gasping.
Yeah, Jaime does a great job.
Years ago, I approached Jaime and I said, Jaime, this thing's going to come down to the reptilian image in your culture. And he was a little, this was before years ago when I started, nobody was talking about this. I was just the odd person that was just trying to force the change of a turn in a river. And he was a little resistant to it. Now, however, he's changed his mind. There have been recent things that have occurred in Mexico that have actually drawn him to be more aware of a possibility of a serpent connection or something symbolically important of the serpent in what's happening now there.
If they took a poll of everyone in this country and you asked them if they believe that there were reptilians or reptoids living beneath the planet, what do you think the percent might be, one way or another, John?
A very small percent.
Would believe it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. You got to remember, I did this thing where I got onto the census site, and I Science Fiction Channel back in 2002 did a survey of like 1,200 people to find out, you know, what their feelings were about extraterrestrial life. It was being hidden and this, that, and the other. They estimated about 62% of Americans over the age of 18 believe that the government is not telling us the truth about extraterrestrial or other than human intelligences. Now, when you look at how many people are in America over the age of 18, that means there's 142 million Americans that say they're being lied to, but nationally, you're going to be lucky if you get 10 to 15,000 people that ever attend a conference.
That's
and it
true.
Just bewilders me. And I sometimes wonder if they don't look at those attendance records at the UFO conferences saying, well, they know by their own numbers and percentages that we're lying to them, but nobody really wants to go there and find out. So maybe they justify it thinking that the whole hiding of this whole thing is really a beneficial thing for us, when really it's just empowering and making richer and more powerful people who have entrenched themselves in controlling factors and positions in the world.
Of the people who have described what these creatures look like, did they talk about language or how they sound or how they communicate?
Well, sometimes you'll hear about grunts. Most of the time you're hearing about telepathic communications. One individual whose account I value highly had said that this creature appeared at his bed. There were other people sleeping in the house that actually opened their eyes and saw this creature walk past their sleeping bags on the floor when it was on its way to this other individual's bedroom. And it was staring at tunnel and underground cavern and possible base maps on the walls as if it was doing some sort of recon. The individual woke up, looked at the creature, threw a teddy bear through it, thinking it was going to just chase it away, and it didn't go. And this being just touched an instrument and then disappeared in front of him. So, where was I? I'm sorry.
Well, no, we were just talking about what kind of communication they had.
Oh, the communications, yes. When he was sitting there with this being in front of him, he said there was a point in which he looked, and there was some sort of a plasma type of a rotating matrix ball or something like this that came down from forward out of this reptilian, and actually he could feel it permeate his forehead and move into his brain. And he says that he was so overpowered by what had happened within, I think it was weeks or maybe a month or two afterwards, or even a couple of days, he felt that whatever this creature had imparted to him as far as wisdom and intelligence or whatever it was, he was acting upon it, because days later he went down and got a job at an optics lab for studying lasers. The guy said, you got to test for this in 2 years in advance. He says, no, I want the test now. He actually took the test, scored high grades, and went in there. And because he had no formal education in the technology, but he was demonstrating in the class that he had advanced knowledge of this, it was highly suspicious to the people who thought that he may have been doing some espionage for somebody else. And he started thinking the same thing. So in other words, when you have a contact, it doesn't necessarily mean you're actually having a contact. There are instances of manipulation by these beings. And the ones that we're seeing if they're coming from an inner earth culture, we are not seeing their children, we are not seeing their artists, we are not seeing their parents, we're not seeing all the other subtle aspects of their culture. We're meeting their scientists, we're meeting their military personnel, we're meeting their security personnel, and these people are going to act more militarily, more militaristic, and more unemotional because they're of science, the detachment. And so those are the beings that we're meeting now.
Have we ever found any bones of these reptoids?
No, but when you're talking about a fossil record, you got to remember we find very few fossils anyway, and how many hundreds of millions of dinosaurs there were. So if you're talking to a very, very small population of these beings who are on surface erratically throughout history, then if they died, they could have had their bones interred or removed. People see elephants all the time, but we could never find where they were burying themselves. It's a big mystery.
I'm beginning to wonder if Sasquatch doesn't live beneath the planet somehow.
I have a feeling that not only Sasquatch and reptoids, but other beings who are visitors and other inhabitants of former civilizations who had their chance on the surface of the Earth, who were afterwards became the aliens to the next Genesis culture, that those beings also live down there.
Next up, let's go to our first-time caller line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead, sir.
Yeah, hi, my name is Mike.
Hi, Mike.
It's all yours, Mike.
All right. I don't know. I just wanted to say, first of all, George, I picked your show up about 3 weeks ago. I really enjoy it.
I'm glad you stumbled into us.
Since then, I drive a tractor at nighttime, and I haven't missed a show since I actually found it.
Perfect.
I just wanted to say, I guess I kind of look at things that I'm one of these people that if I can see it or touch it or whatever, it's real. And not to say that until, I haven't seen something, it's not real, but it just seems kind of far-fetched to think that, for instance, whether you're talking about, the reptilianoids or, aliens or whatever, it just seems strange to me that, you always hear about alien abductions or the sightings and all that. And it seems to be that it's always like in the middle of the night while nobody's around, while there's maybe just a couple of witnesses.
Mm-hmm. Perfect time to do it.
Well, yeah. And Mike, if you're thinking about beings that live underground, perhaps they once inhabited the surface. So really being underground, they feel trapped. And nighttime's the only safe time to really come out.
Yeah, I can understand that. But, then again, you're saying that, you've heard accounts of them wearing clothes and all. And, I mean, if they're that smart and they've inhabited the Earth for so long and they're so far advanced and they're intelligent and all, I mean, and this goes for, even aliens and so on, do you really think that they would be shy? I mean, would they even care?
How
do we know that they would even have those emotions anyway to feel that way to where they, they can only expose themselves at night or around just a small group of people versus, it just seems like for years and years you hear about these things, but yet you never, it's not something you turn on CNN and hear, boom, here's the proof of it.
Yeah, but if you heard that, can you imagine the psychological impact on the world? Can you imagine how many people that decide, I'm not going to go to work tomorrow? Can you imagine how many people would take their money out of the bank account because they saw War of the Worlds or they heard about it and now they're a little afraid maybe they want to go build a bunker of themselves and kind of get their family out of the cities? It would disrupt human society to such a degree, as the Brookings Report said, that unless we're desensitized beforehand, we'll never get past that psychological impact. The thing that worries me most is that, we might be actually seeing a culture or a species being set up for some sort of eventual conflict with humanity. Ronald Reagan in his 1988 disarmament mm-hmm. speech to the United Nations, the General Assembly speech, when he talked about the extraterrestrial threat, and many people have heard about this. If you go to my website, I have an audio link on there where you can hear it. One of the interesting things is that when you read his notes from his drafts, Ronald Reagan's own handwriting, which is on the site, you can see it, where he talks to his Rhett Butler, who is a speechwriter, and he says, I want to make sure that you put my alien fantasy, and he used fantasy in his quote marks, back into this draft, this speech. In other words, he had said it, he had written it, he had sent it off to speechwriters, they took it out. And then he had to tell them, go put it back in. And when they put it back in, it's a strange thing to notice that not only in the quote marks was his words were so tight and almost scrambled when he wrote the word fantasy, and any handwriting analysis person is going to say this person had a trouble thinking this was a fantasy.
Well, I know the late president's son, Michael, and he was telling me a couple years ago that his dad believed in an extraterrestrial presence out there.
And I think he had
seen a UFO near his ranch in,
right.
here
and
in California.
The interesting thing about this handwritten note, Mike, was that when you look above where he had written this reminder, he had actually done a three-pointed zigzag sign, which historically has always been associated with the symbol of the serpent.
Let's go to our East of the Rockies line. You're up on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, my name's Bruce, calling from Brooklyn.
Hi, Bruce.
Hey, Bruce.
How are you? And first of all, George, I'd just like to say you've done an excellent job with Coast to Coast.
Well, thank you.
Really great, great thing you've got. I was reading one of the Zachariah Sitchin Earth Chronicles books, mm-hmm. and I'm not sure which one it was, but he published a picture, which I think came from ancient Mesopotamia, and it depicted two reptoids who
right.
were dressed, and they were holding up a caduceus, sort of like a coat of arms type of picture. And I was just wondering, where does the caduceus come from? I mean, it seems like it's definitely related to reptilians, and it seems like an ancient symbol that goes back a long way. What do you know about it?
The symbol of the caduceus, when you're looking at the caduceus, you're looking at the human spine, and the entwined serpents are the positive and negative polarity of energy that slips up the spine. The staff at the top, or the ball, is generally perceived as being the pineal gland of the human body. When there's wings extended from the ball, this is associated with the balance of serpent and feather. If you look back through history, you're going to see two symbols emerge most prominently in ancient religions, the bird and the feather. Okay, and now you have, in India, you have the Nagas, which are the semi-divine reptilian humanoid beings, and then their enemies are the Garuda bird. Now, here's a serpent versus a bird. In other cultures, you see the same symbolic balance. You see in the United States, our first flag was a serpent. In Mexico City, they have a flag with a eagle with a serpent in its mouth. So here you have this balanced image of reptile and feather. In even Christianity, you have reptilians or reptoids, which are supposedly the physical example of evil, or the devil in the Garden of Eden, or this lizard in the Garden of Eden. And then you have the others, which are the angels, which are humanoid beings with feathers again, which are birds. So you have this balanced thing that you see all throughout history in all these different cultures. And even with the dragon, you're seeing something that's reptilian, yet at the same time it has wings. With the caduceus, you're talking about Aesculapius, which was in ancient Rome, the healer, the great healer. He was associated with serpents. They had Aesculapia, which were these sacred areas in which they healed people. And the only way to heal people was to have them sleep overnight in the temple. And the temple had snakes in the temple. And the brotherhood of Aesculapius was also one which they taught their healing methods and such to their children, and it was an inherited thing. Now, that's why, and even in modern medicine, you have the serpent entwined around the staff, and you see this on hospital ambulances and such like that. So there's this association with healing. There's also the hermetic associations with communication and commerce, which is a different thing altogether, which is a single staff with the snake entwined around it as well.
All right, to stay with us for final phone calls with our guest John Rhodes tonight on Coast to Coast AM as we talk about these reptoids. I'll tell you, these pictures that John supplied us that you'll find on the coasttocoastam.com website that come from his website, reptoids.com, these things are very strange-looking creatures. I'll tell you that. To see something of that kind of magnitude, scope, size, staring at you. Look at the one, by the way, when you go into the image section, look at the last one down there, Night Visit. And just look at the way this thing's peering down on this poor woman. Back in a moment. with your calls. John, do you think Admiral Richard Byrd, when he flew into the hole, might have seen a reptoid or two?
Wow, that's a good question. You know, yeah. May have looked like ants to him at that distance.
Could have been. Yeah, he saw something.
I thought he just saw ants. Look,
he did see a mastodon. I think.
Pardon me.
When he was flying in, I think he did see a mastodon.
Yeah, I've heard rumors to that effect.
Yeah.
You know, but of course we're getting back to the Byrd diaries again, and the authenticity of the Byrd diaries.
True.
You know.
Yeah, but who would fake that?
Well, there's people, you know. That's one of the things I was, when I first started bringing this out to the public's attention about the reptoids, you know, it was hard enough already, and I was talking about such a controversial and volatile subject. I've had strange reactions from people all over the world. But one of the things that led to my dropping out was, I couldn't help but look through the some of these people's reports, and what they were saying was so transparent, especially people even in the UFO community that was kind of a little bit disillusioned with it, because in the very beginning when I was studying the subject, very, very few people were talking about it. There were very few movies on television stuff that were already bringing this out. The information was more raw. It was more real. Now you have an increase in numbers of reports, but a certain percentage of them are going to be because people just fictionalize things. And it's just human nature. And it's forgiving, but at the same time, I don't want to waste my time. I have to get on the next thing.
All right, and on we go. Let's go to our wild card line. Welcome to the program. Hi there.
Hello.
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 I'm on the line.
Yeah, you are. Can you hear us?
Okay. My name's Bonnie. I'm calling from San Diego.
Go ahead.
Hi, Bonnie.
I would like to know, I'm new to the show, okay?
Okay.
But I have friends that have listened to you, and all my friends are Rh negative, and so am I, and my family. And we're curious. Do you and your guests believe all Rh negatives to be reptilians?
Well, I can't comment on that, but John, that's all for you.
Yeah, well, I think I heard Louis Turney the other day say, George, that you were ruled by the head of the dragon.
Yes.
You know, as far as astronomically.
That.
And I thought, you know, if you're not Rh negative, you got something going for you there.
No, I'm O positive, but I wonder if he's accusing me of being a reptoid.
Oh, well, there wouldn't be anything wrong with that. I myself am Rh negative.
Oh, good.
The Rh negative factor, for those people that don't know what Rh even means, it means rhesus. And it basically, there was a mutation of unknown origin that actually occurred between 23 and 25,000 years ago.
Correct.
To the human species. And people who test positive for, in other words, they have a positive blood type, means they tested positive and show an indication of this mutation. People who test negative means it shows that there is no mutation. Now, an original has to be altered, so it means that actually the people who are Rh negatives are part of some select group or small population that was separated by everybody else because the mutation occurred, but they just weren't in the same spot. The Rh negative blood factor has been addressed by Rod Steiger at length, colleagues of my own and myself. We look back and the Rh factor people, about 5% of the world have Rh negative blood. There's higher concentrations, up to 15% in England. In Norway and Scotland, there's heavier concentrations of where the Celts were. These were people that were generally red-haired with green eyes, or brown or black hair with dark brown eyes. These are individuals who, in the very beginning, when we started getting past the Space Brother thing and into the Greys, they started knowing an anomalous increase in reports from people who had Rh-negative blood having being abducted and having contacts or sightings. And if you follow the Rh concentration back like Kalspar Spori did in his genetic population studies, they say the Basque region, which is the area between France and Spain, was the heaviest concentration. As a matter of fact, they said about, at one time, 100% of all the people of that Basque region were Rh negative. The Rh negs, the whole serpent connection to this is, and I'm going about this to get you there, is that if there was an older population in an area of where the Neanderthals were last, if some sort of experimentation happened at a long, long time ago, it may have happened to the offspring of these very ancient man and therefore their offspring and their descendants are the carriers of genetic information that was planted there a long time ago by the reptoids' ancestors when the experiments first began. It's like a geological or genealogical hall of records in your DNA. There is information in your DNA, and sometimes it's been in the UFO community or in my studies, I can tell you that I believe that information is being put into some people with Rh negative blood, and it comes through as intuition and driving intuitive forces in that person's mind, and these people start acting and doing things. Now, are they doing it of their own accord, or are they being driven to do this by something genetically, altered in them? So, no, not everybody's reptilian, but there's a strong degree of possibility that the people with the Rh negative blood are actually at risk of being part of this witch hunt, because if people start taking off after reptoids or reptilians and they get frightened of it, then people with Rh negative blood have to be careful of not being victims to another mass panic.
All right, let's go to our wild card line. Thanks for that, by the way. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Yes, this is Blake. I'm in basically Toledo, Ohio.
Hey, Blake.
Just want to say hi to John.
Hello, sir.
Hi to you, definitely, George. We've been listening to your show for almost a year, and it's we set our clocks to the time. I mean, we don't miss it for nothing.
Great.
But last time I talked to you was during the mad cow disease show that you had on.
Yeah, that was a while back. Yeah,
it's been a while. But my question to John was kind of with our religion and stuff, because I believe that there was and still is dragons that exist just on another plane is the way I've always seen it. But now, from what he was saying about taking the stories that we've heard and turn them upside down, if they don't actually exist underground, and what his thought is between the dragon species and the species that he's talking about.
Reptoids, yeah.
Yeah, reptoids. What he feels on that, and if they live underground, if they might have something to do with the dragon ley line.
Well, when you're talking about, dragons, you're talking about symbols, merged symbols of birds and serpent. The dragons at one time, when you look back at the fossil record, you know that there were large, dinosaur creatures or pterodactyls flying around. So there could have been animals that were actually dragons, but these were perhaps animals like a wise old elephant, something that's so wise and graceful in appearance that people were just enamored with them, that were killed off at one time a long time ago, because we love to kill things, us humans, even if it means there's no more of them left, especially if it means there's going to be no more of them left, and that these creatures may have been pursued by the local and cultures a long time ago. A lot of the dragon mythology is more of a symbolic language. It's one of transformation and overcoming that evil or dark reptilian side of yourself. We all have some sort of power inside us that we can grasp if we look at it. But it's like it's like a razor. It'll cut you if you're not careful with it. So I do believe that maybe dragons and creatures like that existed at one time. At this point, unless it's being done in some hidden niche that we're not aware of yet, like Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, alluded to on some lost culture underground. The same thing with Dinotopia, all these television shows. Even Dan Aykroyd has a television a script under his arm about reptoids. So, and he's the MUFON media representative. So when you have all these symbols merged towards now, it's really interesting that you ask this great question, because when you're looking forward to 2012, you're looking forward at a time, even in the Chinese calendar, where it's the year of the serpent or the year of the dragon, and it transforms into the year of the snake in 2013.
Very good. Thanks for that question, Blake. Appreciate it. Next up, let's go to our West of the Rockies line. Welcome to Coast to Coast. Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead, sir.
This is Matt. I'm on there.
Yep, you sure are.
All right. Hi, George. Hi, John.
Hello.
All right, I wanted to get through last night, but I guess you guys didn't have enough time. This question was for Nick, but also relates to tonight's show as well. John, have you found throughout any of your research that our government or a government or many governments or all governments, I don't know which, are going to stage a mass alien invasion, but it's actually going to be fake. And that's been conditioning us, like with alien movies like War of the Worlds and Independence Day and stuff like that, to fear them, so they can unify the world into a one government type.
Yeah, that's part of what I wrote a little bit. I addressed that a little bit on my site when I showed the handwritten note of Ronald Reagan with his serpent symbol he wrote above it. I don't think that they're going to have to fake anything. You know,
you think it's going to be a real invasion?
Arthur C. Clarke alluded to this when he talked right after the White House event happened, when he released the book Childhood's End, and he said, these aren't my ideas. I think that eventually we're going to be brought to a point of where a real conflict does happen. Now, there have been a lot of persistent talk about an approaching contingent force of alien reptoids who may have left Earth a long time ago to travel the universe and are now coming back. And the ones here, do they want these guys coming back and kicking them out of their positions of power? Are they bad? If they tell us they're bad, are they bad? You know, so this is where they say, even in the Bible, the elect will be deceived, because your leaders may tell you one thing, but we've been lied to before.
What are the next things you do as a crypto hunter,
John? I'm taking off across the United States for 2 years, going on the road and traveling around and doing DVD road logs of people who have had encounters across the United States.
How are you going to find them? Or they find you?
They're going to find me, because I'm going to be going out to their areas, and I'm going to be, our website is going to be tracking this all along. It's going to be thecryptohunter.com, C-R-Y-P-T-O, hunter.com. In other words, I hunt all secrets. I'm a researcher of secrets. And I'll be coming out to your hometown near you. And if you hear or see of me in the area and you want somebody to look at your evidence and hear your story, just call me.
They see you coming, something's going on, huh?
Well, if they see me coming, better look behind my shoulder, make sure I'm not running, because if I am, they better head in the same direction at full base.
East of the Rockies, you're up with us. Hi there.
Hi, is this me?
Yes, sir.
Hi, I was wondering, I'd like to ask John about the hole in the ground and the effects of gravity in there.
Now, you're talking about the hollow hole in the poles, or
yeah,
the Mel's hole that Art was talking about years ago?
I'm not sure. Whichever one it was that, like, sloped down.
Yeah, if you're talking about a possible entrance that's 800 miles in circumference at the polar regions, we've got to remember that gravity is an attraction of mass, and even though there's curved ground under your feet, your mass is still going to be attracted towards the center. Even if the Earth was hollow, the actual middle ground between the hollow area and the outer area would have its heaviest density of matter and attraction. So even if you were on the inside of the planet, you would be attracted towards the outside of the shell. Number one, centrifuge will play a part in it. And number two, the attraction of mass.
And listen to this, John. This will interest you in terms of areas on this planet, and I won't read them all, but I'll just mention the ones here in the United States, where they believe there's entrance to the center of the planet.
Mm-hmm.
Kentucky on the Monmouth Cave in south central Kentucky. Mount Shasta in California. There's supposed to be an opening there.
Yep. Reptoids have been seen there.
Then that's it. That's it in this country. The rest are in Argentina, Brazil, some in China, Italy, but just the one in Kentucky and the one in California. That's it for the entrances.
Well, we're talking about possible entrances, but, you know, there are probably many more that we're unaware of.
Oh, sure.
You know, 1/2000th of the Earth's surface is actually porous enough to have an opening into the underworld.
What would you do if you saw a reptoid came right up to you?
You know, I've been wondering that, like my joke, you know, if you see me running in your direction,
yeah,
you'll be heading in the same direction.
I don't know. You just might be in shock that you saw one. You may just stand there.
Well, you know, the thing is that the first thing, if anybody encounters one of these creatures, is to stand dead still. You don't want to raise your arms, because that may be provoking a signal of attack.
Mm-hmm.
You want to keep your palms upwards and open so they can see you're not holding anything. I wouldn't approach it, because reptiles have a keen sense of smell.
And these are intelligent beings, though, right?
They're intelligent beings.
Okay.
You know, hey, if we're, even if something's wild, even if something was wild, the last thing you should do is run.
Well, it's not
because you'll be attacked. It's because if it is a wild creature, even if it's not a reptoid, if it's a wild creature and you start running, the game's over.
What do they eat?
I don't know. You know.
Don't tell me.
No, I won't tell you. John Lear, I have an interview with him on a video that I've got coming up. He doesn't do very many interviews because he was kind of attacked for even touching upon this reptilian stuff in the very beginning. And his private office is covered with dragons. He got attacked for mentioning that there was rumors that they would be eating people. But, you know, there's a lot of the hype again.
Yeah.
You know, you're just repeating what you've heard.
The fear factor.
But a lot of the food sources from our food chain up here, now we know that there's a lot of surplus foods in the world that are supposedly shipped out to other nations, but we have no telling if that freight car or that truck actually made it overseas. It could have just very well have gone into some sort of a hangar or docking station and disappeared. Now, there have been many reports of people saying they've seen commerce traffic going into airport hangars and then just suddenly disappearing when the hangar doors open up again, which means it's going underground. So they may be actually supplementing their food system with food items that we're negotiating through treaties to send down there while they deliver us technology as per, you know, the reports that have come out recently, you know, even with the colonel.
Can these creatures morph into other things?
That's a good question. I mean, we know that there's chameleons, and the reptilian form through history has always shown that it's very adaptive.
It's got that ability.
Their skin color.
That's right.
You know, they can change their shape. We've recently found a jellyfish in the deep oceans that can actually change its shape into 8 other forms of fishes. So the profile actually looks like it's something that was not going to be scrumptious to the predator that just came by.
Let's go to our final first-time caller. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, my name is Paul from Rhode Island. How you doing?
Good, Paul. Go ahead.
Hi, Paul.
Well, I just want to say I love your show. I actually came across your show while looking for something intelligent and, you know, intellectually stimulating to listen to while I got a new job.
Oh, thanks. That's a compliment.
Yes, it is. Thank you very much. I have a couple of quick comments to make about things I've heard throughout the night. You may be hi, John, by the way.
Oh, hi.
I heard you make a comment about saying when Adam and Eve were kicked out of the garden. You said that it's possible that the garden may have been underground due to the Bible saying that they saw the light. Well, I took a look and it said that didn't make any mention of them of it seeing the light. It said that they were kicked out of the garden and an angel was posted east side with a flaming sword. Also, we're talking about Revelation with the dragon. One thing about Revelation you got to keep in mind is that Revelation is full of symbolism. So
oh, absolutely.
Absolutely.
It's all about symbolism. The clock's got us, John Rhodes. I want to thank you for being a very special guest on Coast to Coast
tonight. Thank
you very
much, George. I really appreciate it being on, and I'm really happy to be back in touch with everybody out there and knowing that everybody is about to launch off into a new horizon. Be careful. Watch out. There's reptoids all around us and all under our feet.
John Rhodes, reptoids.com. For Steve Carr, Nikki Imbrunoni, Dan Galanti, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, and Sean LaDesure, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, this list gets longer. Be safe, everyone.